All right, Mail It In Friday, off and running, TSN 1050, online, tsn1050.ca. Your home smart speaker and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Yo Dog Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, a buddy Peter King later in the hour for Super Wild Card Weekend, which will kick off tomorrow. Six games this weekend.
Is that a new name, Super Wild Card?
Yeah. It's so stupid. It's so dumb. They've expanded the wild card, or I guess they expanded the playoffs by one team, right? It used to be six, and now it's seven, so you get extra games on wild card weekend, and it's super. They couldn't come up with anything more creative than that.
Just stick with wild card weekend. Just name two of them. Just do two.
It's Who over cares? The top. You know, you get large fries, and then you get supersize fries.
What was the difference between supersize and large?
Probably about 800 calories. Yeah, there's another. It's like those big gulps. They're like two liters now.
Do they? I think if you went anything at that restaurant that you're referring to and said supersize, there was a significant difference.
I don't know.
I think supersize meant you had a growl on and you were serious.
Oh yeah, but I always thought it was more of like a marketing campaign, like. Supersize me, and all of a sudden,
no, you weren't getting only one more French fry. You were being fed.
Can you still do that? Like, well, I haven't asked for a supersize in 15 years.
Well, because you're not 275 pounds.
That doesn't mean I don't still love a supersize fries. I'll get like if my wife is going there and bringing the kids there or whatever and going to McDonald's, I will say, get me a large fry. That's all I want. Yes. Is bring me back a large fry. If I have the option at a supersized fry. I'll take it. Like, why have I been cutting myself off at the knees over the past couple of years?
I don't know if it's still around, but you can certainly tell. Like, when you get your kids those Happy Meals and they've got the dinky little fry in that white little bag,
it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
Yeah. But then it's embarrassing. Like, the difference from a medium to a large, I believe, is quite significant. Like, large is the way to go because – I can't even imagine the amount of salt and gross calories.
It's crazy.
I made the mistake last weekend. It was just a busy time cleaning up stuff.
Yeah.
And my wife shot out and she's like, I'm going to go grab it. And usually it was so weird. It was like an out of body experience. I was like, I'm not even hungry. Don't even think about it. Right. And most times you say, grab a six of nugs for me. And that's what was in my head, but my mouth started moving, and I said, not even hungry, grab me 20 nugs. And I demolished 20 nugs. They got home, and I cleaned out. Yes.
20 is
20 is so.
It's a commitment. It's a big commitment.
You need a nap after. That's a job.
Yeah.
20
Dude,
nuggets
don't,
is a job.
I know. It was a low point. It was a what?
That's a diaper. And that's a lot. It's a lot of extra.
But it was so sickening to think that I've gone that far below the line where I was just like, you know, a casual, just grab me six nugs. And I wanted to say grab me six nugs, but it just came out of my mouth. 20 nugs would be great. And just casually went about my business.
And your wife didn't flinch. Didn't flinch.
Dude, didn't flinch. And all of a sudden this coffin of McNuggets shows up. And it's right in front of my face, and I destroyed it.
Well, you got to once it's there, you got to take it down. But
dude,
I've got
here's
some
the worst
inside.
Part. Two little containers of barbecue sauce, both gone.
Like, oh, those are gone. Those are... Four nuggets in. Those things are gone.
Yeah, because that you do a deep dip on those.
A
but
deep
I've got some
dip.
Some
a
interesting news.
20 pack.
Our buddy Gurdeep just sent me a note and said they got rid of Supersize after the documentary. It was bad PR, right?
Right. That makes sense. Like, I haven't seen it promoted. I haven't.
Well, that guy almost killed himself in a movie.
Yeah, exactly. Eating... Like, that's McDonald's fault that this guy acts like an idiot for 30 days.
Right.
But, yeah, that was.
And
that was
a year.
No,
well,
he ate
it
every
30
day for
days.
30 days.
Every meal, every day for 30 days. And by, like, day 26 or something, the doctor's like, you're going to die here.
Yeah, you're not far off just, like, keeling over here. It was horrible PR for McDonald's that guy put himself through that, and it was called Supersize Me, of course.
Right.
You know, he couldn't have called that Medium Size Me so we could all continue to enjoy Supersize options.
But I do believe that's what he was shining a light on is the amount of portion and amount of disgustingness.
It's a lot of
like,
it's a lot
I'm
of
that
food.
Guy for I would, my order.
I got to be honest, though. Like, I was going to shine a light and just have a – a little bit of like a confession myself, because I don't know where you guys are at. Like, do you still have Halloween candy around the house?
Oh, of course. I had three today.
That's what I was saying.
Like, I literally have a Kit Kat today, like 2 hours ago.
I've got right in front of me a little mini Kit Kat, the Smarties, the Snickers.
Of course.
Like, we have a tub still. And what is it, 3 months?
It's January. Yeah, it's 2.5 months later. It's still lurking, and I do the drive-by almost as if it's October 30th in the house.
Right.
Like, that's kind of the vibe that I have when I walk by that. I'm like, well, I guess, what do you want out of me? I have no self-control. I have to have two Kit Kats, Buttercup or whatever, and a pack of Smarties.
Caramel,
out there.
My whole thing, though, is I blame it on COVID because I overbought. I still anticipated, because it was going to be outside, the kids were going to come by and that. Now, I can't even remember what I did for a grand total. I remember Drager was like running it looked like he was running a nightclub in front of his house. Like he had people circling through.
We did too. We had a ton of people out.
I want to say eight. Yeah. Had eight people come by my house, and I think I had 500 pieces of this stuff.
Yeah, it's still around in my house too.
Whitby COVID off the charts. You guys.
Well, it's nowhere close to what Toronto is, and Toronto was shut down. It's funny how that works. Halloween came and went, but apparently, you know, kids not being able to actually enjoy their life for once in 10 months meant everything was going to stop on November 1st, but shockingly, it didn't happen. But anyway, it's going to be a fun weekend with six different NFL games. We'll get Al's brother on the clock a little bit later in the afternoon. We've got Peter King coming up in about 15 minutes. The Raptors are in action tonight. We'll touch on that later on. Jack will join us. You can hear and watch the game on TSN tonight. And it's not a literal must win, but it kind of feels like you got to get this one at 1-6 if you want to keep any sense of belief alive moving forward. But this week the Leafs have been in camp, and we've talked a lot about Joe Thornton. Yesterday we talked a lot about Austin Matthews getting some penalty kill time, and they're working on their special teams. Yesterday was more about the PK, and today it was about the power play. And the power play units are out. And Sheldon Keefe, at this point, this is all just whiteboard material that he has probably been working on for the past 5 months, basically.
Exactly.
And he's going to go with it. This is what we're going to see come Wednesday night. We'll likely see it into Friday, Saturday. But at some point, 4, 5, 6 games into the year, he's going to have to determine whether or not it's working, whether or not the whiteboard made sense. You know, just because it looked right in November and December doesn't mean it'll look right or play right come January, February, and onward.
Right.
But the first power play unit is Matthews, Marner, Thornton, Simmons, and Riley. And the second power play unit is Tavares, Nylander, Hyman, Spezza, and Lehtinen. And what sticks out to me, I just keep coming back to the Joe Thornton name, because I have to be consistent with the way I've reacted to the whole Thornton storyline. I'm very excited that he's here. I love the content. I love his stories, a Hall of Famer. It's awesome that he's here and what he represents. And I hope it works. I hope it works for him.
You're
I hope it works for the
much.
Team. This feels like we're pushing it a little bit too much. Like, he's 41 years old. He hasn't played in the NHL in about a year. He's on the first line with Matthews and Marner, and now he's on the first power play. I'm a little bit concerned that whiteboard. I get it. You see Joe Thornton. I don't know if we're going to see the whiteboard version of Joe Thornton once the puck actually drops.
Well,
I'm worried they're pushing it a little bit too far.
I've got to be honest. I expected Thornton on the first power play. He's one of the best passers in the history of the game. So that, to me, would work to his strength.
Where so the guy that gave $11 million to in Tavares to come here and help the power play, what, did he just become all of a sudden a stiff?
No, not at all. I think what you're doing is you're showing off some depth, but I think it's up to Sheldon, and that's what a good coach does, is to place players to have success, place them in an area where they could have success. What concerned me is more Thornton as a first-line left winger. He hasn't, you know, traditionally, I know people pointed out that in 97 at the Olympics or whatever, he played on the wing. I'm talking consistently, he's been a centerman. Now he's on the wing, and the wing is the least amount of responsibility defensively in hockey, but it's still a little bit easier to play than center at this age. I expected him to be third-line something and first power play. When I saw Joe Thornton signed, I expected him on the first power play. I didn't expect him on the first line. That's what's been the bigger shock for me. I don't know how you guys feel.
Yeah,
this is going to turn into
two, but
this is going to turn into 1A, 1B power play.
Right.
Because when you put Thornton on the ice with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, they're going to have so much possession time. They're not going to be moving around the whole lot. And I don't know if you guys remember, it wasn't too long ago. It might have been a calendar year or a little bit before that, where they tried the two power plays. I don't think Sheldon Keefe was the coach. It might have been Babcock, where he split it up a minute and a minute. It didn't matter. If you just had two chances to score, you were all over them. He said, after a minute, you're getting off the ice. And that had these guys all bent out of shape because they had to skate off the ice. Their tail was between their legs, and it didn't really work. So it wouldn't shock me if Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, they're going to be on a 1B power play unit with Tavares and Nylander and somebody else on defense, because there's just... You know, they all got to buy into it, saying there's not enough puck to go around here for all you guys to have success, so this is the way it's going to work.
Right, and I think I based on that logic, the guy who is going to have to accept that more than anyone is John Tavares, who has probably since the age of five been on the first power play unit wherever he has played. And when he got here, it was about making sure John Tavares felt comfortable. Make sure he gets his minutes. Make sure he gets his cookies.
Oh, dude, he had the UFA promises nailed down. He had, you're on Mitch Marner's line. You're on the first power play unit. You're the captain of the team. And stuff's getting picked away. You just can't pick the letter off of his jersey right now.
No.
Mitch Marner's been picked off his line. He's not in the first power play unit. So maybe he has something to say come puck drop on Wednesday night.
I'll go a step further. You see the best power plays in the league, and the Leafs are right there with the amount of talent and what they're capable of doing. But a lot of those guys usually take 80 seconds, 80 to 90 seconds.
No question.
Right? Like, I mean, Edmonton's different. I think they were the number one power play last year.
They were top three all year.
And it was McDavid and Draisaitl it was 2 minutes, but they didn't have a Thornton kicking around. Yamamoto's a really good player, and I think he's going to have more of a role. RNH, but they didn't have one of the best passers in the history of the game, and Joe Thornton. So, you know, you're going to try him out there, but you're right. Oh, it may get to a sense where, you know, what's going to happen if Tavares and Nylander, that second power play is ready to go, and the first power play starts to stretch it out a little bit, 90 seconds, you know the comments coming to the bench.
Oh, yeah. You come off the ice, and you're like, well, we had our 20 seconds there. We couldn't get one shot on net, and that's all we're getting. And then you got some grumpy pants on the bench. But as players, they're going to have to get through that and sort it out and realize, as everyone's talked about, it's for the greater good. It's for the team success. And I guess the big boys, however long they're going to stay out there, they're not coming off after a minute, I'll tell you that. It's just not happening. No good player says, oh, a minute, I got to skate off now. It's not peewee. Yeah.
No,
it's not
nor should they. Exactly. Why would you?
Go.
If they're slinging it around and feeling it, why would you want Austin Matthews to have an internal clock saying, I better get off so Tavares can get on? You're not doing that. I mean, It is another, I guess, example of the message being sent that everyone's going to have to chew on it a little bit. Everyone's going to have to buy in. And when I think of the players on this team that should be committed to that, should be at the front of the line based on desperation to win a cup, John Tavares wouldn't be at the top of that list. I think Thornton has to be number one. Right? I think Joe Thornton has to be. He's 41 years old. He's been in the league for 23 years. He's never won a cup. He is the most desperate. You might argue Spezza would be number two. Tavares would be number three.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
based
he's been in the league for 13 years, and he's the captain. He was the chosen one from the GTA that came home. He's got the captaincy. That means you got to play second power play. If that means you got to kill some penalties, if that means some nights you're not going and you play 14 minutes, so be it. You know, and to be fair to John Tavares, he's not a guy who publicly is going to complain about anything. Like, he doesn't give you much. He speaks a lot publicly, but he doesn't really give you anything one way or the other. Like, the pendulum doesn't swing a lot with John Tavares, and that's why I think they like the fact that he's the captain. He'll speak every day. He'll speak his mind. He'll give you something, but it's just not his disposition to be, you know, flying off the deep end.
Yeah, it's not bulletin board material what he says. He's very, very contrite. He's thoughtful. But he's not a guy that is going to shoot from the hip and give you stuff that you're like, whoa, what did he say? Like,
right.
He's very well thought out, and I think he's well coached up, too, before he gets to those PR situations. Like, he knows exactly going in what he's going to say. So,
and every skill player, he's like every other skill player, regardless of what's happening. Regardless of the money, the guaranteed contract, every skill player, and Brian, I was one, you still want your cookies.
Of course you do.
You do.
Of course you do.
What worries me for him, if he buys in and plays fantastic, but the production looks bad, you know the next narrative, right? Why are you paying $11 million for that?
That, and that's something no one wants to deal with, especially in this market where there's such a hyper focus on dollars
based on production. But it's not even this market, Brian. You're right.
It's everywhere.
It's the world, right? But you're right. Yeah. In this market where it's $11 million and you're spending $40 million on four players, and you know you have to have turnover at the bottom of your roster based on having those four players make that much, and you know, say his production takes a slight step back because he has to give away some power play time, some power play points, that type of stuff. It doesn't look as good, but ultimately, if they reach the goal they're looking for, nobody cares.
No one's going to care. Everyone is aware of that. Everyone has established that for quite some time. Everyone pulls their weight. You win. You get to a cup final. Maybe you win a cup. Who cares? No one's going to look at the stats.
Who cares,
man? No one's looking at the stats. They're looking at the names engraved on a Stanley Cup.
But that's what they're looking at. The minute that, if that doesn't happen, when you start to dissect and go, okay, hold on a second here. What went wrong? And then you look at.
But the flip side of that is you're getting paid the money you're getting paid, and you are the player you are. So pull your weight. You know, okay. Yeah, sure, you're not with Marner and Hyman. You're with VC and Nylander. Doesn't mean you can all of a sudden score 22 goals. You know, you're paid to score 35 and 80 and be a leader and be a force and, you know, win draws and be a two-way guy and be sound. And I think that's what I expect out of Tavares. That's what I expect. I don't think he needs Mitch Marner to do that necessarily. Mitch Marner would help him get a little bit higher up. Hyman might help him get a little bit higher up. If you're on a power play that's playing 90 seconds with Matthews and Marner, probably going to get a little bit more. But I think even if that is taken away from you, if you're John Tavares, you still got to pull your weight.
Yeah.
Right? No one's going to sit there and say, well, come on. He only played with William Nylander. You know, Nylander's a pretty good player. Go out there and do it. You know,
like
Malkin didn't play with the best players all the time, or Sid doesn't play with the best players all the time. You share the wealth.
If you look at what Sidney Crosby's done his whole career, it was, you know, Dupuis, Kunitz. It wasn't like it was 50 goal scorers every year, and this guy made hay all the time.
Exactly.
And he's still doing it.
Yep.
Rust or whoever gets thrown up there with him. He always just makes the most of it, and he's always got the points. Never says a word.
Yep.
I got to be honest. I drew a blank just like you. I was like, is it Dupuis?
I kept thinking Duchesne. I was thinking Duchesne, Dupuis.
Yeah, left-handed. That...
I almost spat out 20-pack nuggies. Just instinctively, I just was this close. 20-pack nuggies. That's been his winger for the past 12 years in Pittsburgh.
The 20-pack was tough. And by the way, Hayes, you don't need to send me the golf update in the morning. I already know what's going on with that leaderboard, you moron. I watched it live.
I am feeling very good about my pick right now because we're letting it ride on the Century Invitational. But I should point out that Dustin Johnson, your boy, is out there on the course right now. He's 2 under through 6. He's up to 4 under. He's still got an opportunity to chug
away.
You do not
count him out, and that's what it's pissed me off. The last time, the Masters, it was flipped around. I took DJ. No,
you took DJ,
and I took Justin Thomas. And Justin Thomas just kind of let me down a little bit. So I flipped the switch, and then it's just, this guy's 5 under through 10 yesterday, and then the text comes, 7 a.m., he's 8 under, tied for the lead.
Yeah, with Harris English. I feel pretty good about that pairing. Yeah, I think
Harry English can play, but
Harry
English
can play, but JT, I mean, he won it last year. He's going for a back-to-back title out in Hawaii. And how beautiful does that scenery look? Just seeing those guys tee off on every hole, it's just like picturesque. 80 degrees. Hawaii, the ocean surrounds every single shot.
Because you're looking out your window and there's a foot of snow and it's
that
minus
doesn't help.
Whatever. Yeah.
That doesn't even matter
what the hell's out there. You can't go out there anyway.
Can't play anyway, at this point.
That's true.
Peter King coming up on Wild Card Weekend. 6 games. We'll break them down with Peter. We got Ray Ferraro coming up just after 5. I cannot confirm or deny what we could be getting to later this afternoon. And Jack Armstrong still to come. And Al's brother back on the clock. picking all six winners. Maybe all six losers. We'll see. We'll get to that around 6:30. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
This Al's brother is messaging me. Like, this guy, I already had to text him once today. Belichick, do your job. He is the picker. He is the winner picker. And he's asking me thoughts on this. I'm like, no, you have to figure out, do the math, like look into it, do a deep dive. And he's asking me, do you have strong feet?
That's not good.
He's a loser.
That's right. He's a cooler. He's a loser. And that's very concerning from your standpoint to hear that Al's brother, a little bit of trepidation behind the behind the glass there with Al's brother on his picks.
I can't trust him. I'm just going to have to change his nickname from Al's brother to White Underpants. Just can't trust it. Cannot trust it.
You can't. I think I saw someone sent us a picture of a guy golfing in white pants today, and there was some weird kind of discolorment. I don't think that's even a word, but there was some weird coloring going on one of the sides of the pants, and people are wondering what's going on there.
On tour?
Yeah, I believe it. I think it's someone in Hawaii. It might have been DeChambeau. I don't know. I gotta go back and look at the picture, but it's a gamble. Why you'd wear all white? It's hot in Hawaii, too.
Tight, too. Like, tight.
Yep. It's a big gamble. Big gamble.
Full lather.
Yeah. So, we got some breaking news here. Jake Glazer tweeting out that the Dallas Cowboys have fired their defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan.
Wow.
So, wow, that's really going to change things moving forward. I guess that means, obviously, Mike McCarthy will be back. I think we knew that. I mean, Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones have indicated that. But that's a move, I suppose, down in Dallas. And to talk about a lot of different things happening throughout the NFL, including the upcoming Wild Card weekend, three games tomorrow, three games on Sunday. Here is NFL insider from NBC, Peter King. How you doing, Peter?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We're doing very well. We want to get to the games here momentarily, but this Deshaun Watson story coming out of Houston about him not being happy with ownership and the hierarchy of the team, what can you tell us about that? What do we know about what's going on with Watson and the Texans, and where does this go in the future?
Watson's good friends with Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes has been singing the praises of Eric Bieniemy, the Kansas City offensive coordinator, who very much wants to get a head coaching job. And he not only wants to get a head coaching job, but I think he's almost the NFL is going to have a lot of egg on its face if Eric Bieniemy doesn't get a head coaching job because of his resume, particularly his last 8 years coaching with coaching on Andy Reid's staff. So now this could change, but as of now, the Kansas City Chiefs have not gotten a request from the Houston Texans to interview Eric Bieniemy. The other five teams that have coaching openings this year all have requested permission to talk to Eric Bieniemy. So that's one thing that burns him. And the other one, which Adam Schefter and others have reported, is that he was asked by the ownership of the Texans to give his opinion on personnel people that he knows or that friends in the league think are very good. And he gave him his opinion on a few, and they never even asked him about the guy who was hired, who was Nick Caserio, Belichick's right-hand man in New England. So that is what has led to some of his dissatisfaction up to this point.
Peter, I'm kind of 50-50 on bulletin board material. I think sometimes it's yep. nothing that can be posted and motivate you. But sometimes you get that one comment, like Juju Smith-Schuster's, where it's just like, these guys are a bunch of gray faces. They're nameless people to me, and they're just the Browns. Like, wasn't that a little bit? I don't think that Tomlin's a guy that would look at that and support that kind of comment in any way possible. Like, what do you make of that?
Well, I think when Juju Smith-Schuster dances on a team's 50-yard line as if to say, we're going to dance all over you today, that, to me, really goes over the line, and Tomlin interceded in that. You know, I heard him say this, and I actually watched the video because it looked like just an unnecessary thing to say. And I'm sure the Browns are going to take it and run with it. And you know, it's going to be all over their locker room. This guy doesn't think we're any good and all this. We'll show them all that. But I think so much of that stuff is really kind of overrated. I've covered the NFL for a long time, and I've never gone into a locker room after a game and listened to a guy say, "Yep, I played harder today because of a comment from Juju Smith-Schuster." I mean, I just don't think it's that big a deal. Now, when he danced on people's logo at midfield, that was a different story. The Bengals tried to knock him into next week, and on a couple of occasions in that game, really hit him legally very hard, but hit him very, very hard. So I don't think it's that big a deal. Most people do think it's a big deal. We'll see on Sunday whether it is a big deal.
I kind of look at it as a sign of the confidence coming out of Pittsburgh, not necessarily based on the history between these two teams, but what's going on in Cleveland, where COVID has completely shut them down. They have not been able to get into their facility. They haven't been practicing. Their head coach won't be there. They're losing a bunch of starters. And a lot of times the guys who talk the toughest are the ones that realize, I can kind of get away with talking tough because I don't think I'm going to get smacked back. Could you see it being kind of from that angle, Peter, where Pittsburgh's looking at Cleveland saying, I don't know how they're going to beat us because they can't even practice. They don't have their head coach. It's a mess what's going on with the Browns right now.
Here's one of the difficult things for the Browns, maybe even as difficult as losing Kevin Stefanski. The left guard on my 2020 NFL All-Pro team is Joel Bitonio. And Joel Bitonio is one of the guys who's going to be out Sunday with COVID. And, you know, a coach does a lot. No, and I'm not demeaning in any way, because I think Stefanski has been phenomenal for this team. But in my opinion, I think it's really difficult when you start losing important players against a team with a great, not a good, but a great defensive front, and you lose Bitonio. That's a huge, huge loss for this team. And, you know, at least in my opinion, as big a loss as the head coach. And so I think they're obviously going to have a really rough time on Sunday.
With Peter King, NFL Insider, we've been talking about the Bills all season, watching them rise. And, you know, every year when we get to playoff time, we discuss quarterbacks with pressure on them to get it done. And, you know, there's obviously veterans that need to get it done before the clock expires, guys like Breeze. Not so much a guy like Brady, but he'd like to do it clearly in Tampa. I think Rodgers would apply with only one Super Bowl on his resume. And then when it comes to the younger quarterbacks, I think the focus, understandably so, is on Lamar Jackson because of his playoff resume with him winning the MVP a year ago. But Josh Allen is in a similar scenario. I mean, it was really ugly in Houston last year, like really ugly in the second half. And he's had a remarkable season. But we got to see it come this weekend, don't we? Like, he's got to show up and play, because that Indianapolis defense, they can stop the run. They do not stop the pass, and that should set up well for Allen.
Here's the thing. I mean, it's very interesting when we talk about young players, and, yeah, boy, a lot of pressure on Josh Allen, a lot of pressure on Lamar Jackson. Well, I looked it up today, and Peyton Manning's first playoff win was at age 27. And believe me, he was starting to hear, because I remember it, he was starting to hear some of the things that John Elway heard in Denver. Can't win a playoff game, can't win the big game, can't get to the Super Bowl, all that stuff. And Elway erased that all, but it took him to the last 2 years of his career to do so. And think about it now. Josh Allen's 24 years old. I don't care if he throws five interceptions on Sunday and they lose by 20 points. I'm not giving up on Josh Allen. You know, no, I'm just going to say, hey, it was a bad Sunday. You know, but, and the same thing for Lamar Jackson. Now, the difference with Lamar Jackson, like, when I look at Josh Allen right now, I look at a guy who I've forgotten that game last year, and I'm exaggerating, but I've forgotten it because for all but three or four games this year, Josh Allen was as good as any quarterback in football. So he buried the narrative on him. Careless, inaccurate, explosive, but always going to make enough mistakes to lose. Okay, he's kind of buried that this year. And Lamar Jackson, look, the difference with him is he's played great almost at every turn, except in two, they're not humiliating, but in two very poorly played playoff games. So I just kind of look at him and say, I look at both of those young guys and say, they got a long way to go. And I'm just not going to draw any conclusions on their legacy or careers based on a game that's played when they're 24 or 25 years old.
With Peter King, NFL Insider, I saw this about an hour ago. NFL Research tweeted this out, that the starting quarterbacks that will play in this year's playoffs, bunch of records being set. 6 Super Bowl winners, that's tied most in single postseason all time. 12 combined Super Bowl wins, a lot of that is Brady, clearly. But 4 former Super Bowl MVPs, tied for most all-time. 7 combined Super Bowl MVP awards, that's the most all-time. So we're talking Roethlisberger, Russell, Brady, Mahomes, Rodgers, Breeze. They all made it. They're all here at the end. Is that just simply the way it was supposed to play out? Is that coincidental? Or does it say something about COVID and how difficult this season has been that maybe in retrospect we should have expected – you know, the cream of the crop to be standing at the end, and a lot of these veteran quarterbacks who have been in their system for a long, long time, Brady notwithstanding, to feel comfortable enough to kind of get through a lot of the waves that have been crashing on them this year?
That's a really interesting question, and I have not thought of it, but my absolute gut feeling is that COVID has very little to do with what's happened in this season. In fact, had there been no COVID and had the offseason been absolutely regular, in my opinion, I think Tom Brady and the Bucks might have been the best team in the NFC. Because if you think about it, you know, and this is it's a weird thing to start. Tom Brady, all he did was throw at a local school with some of his receivers. He never had an opportunity to meet or to plot the future with coaches, anything like that, I think it was July 28th is when they were first able to get together. So just imagine that Brady for 6 months, you know, sort of foaming at the mouth to get into his new offense, his new team, and he can't do anything. And that's why I think they were shaky early. So I think it is an advantage to have been with your same team. But I do think that no matter what you had to do in the off season, I think cream rises to the top. J.C. Treader, the NFLPA president, NFL Players Association president, wrote a little manifesto a couple of weeks ago in which he said, I don't think we need off-season programs anymore. We've played well enough so that it should be proof that teams don't need to do all this stuff in the off season. And the initial reaction of every coach and GM was, he's crazy. He's out of his mind. But honestly, I'm not sure he's wrong. I'm really not sure he's wrong. I do think there should be some mental repetitions and some mental work in the off season. But I think it's silly in a game as physical as the NFL is, to spend a lot of time hitting each other in the offseason.
Peter, do you have any inside scoops on the job openings, head coaches? My boy Adam Gase going to show up somewhere? Please don't. Is it going to be just recycle these guys? Is there new blood? I know they're talking about Meyer maybe making $12 million down in Jacksonville. I don't know if that can be the case. Any inside scoops on that?
You know, there's 3 little tidbits that I think are kind of interesting, okay? So Arthur Smith, who is the offensive coordinator at Tennessee, and who the GM of the Titans, John Robinson, told me in the summer, what I like about Arthur Smith is that he zigs when the defense is zagging. He's very, very good at keeping people off guard. I think he's going to get a job. I think the Atlanta Falcons really like him. That's number one. Number two, I think Urban Meyer is a kind of a fair-haired guy in Jacksonville. I was told this week categorically that deal is not done. They don't even know each other very well yet. I think Urban Meyer wants to do it. I would be highly, highly, highly cautious. As I've written the last 2 weeks, he's quit head coaching jobs at age 45, 46, and 54. And whether because of exhaustion, unhappiness, health reasons, I question also how much he would be able to cope with the losing that invariably comes with a new franchise. I mean, 15 years ago, Nick Saban was the Urban Meyer, and he went to Miami with much fanfare, got a five-year contract, was made the second highest paid coach in football by Wayne Huizenga, the owner of the Dolphins. And after the second year, he was 15-17 and begged Huizenga to let him out of his contract so he could go coach Alabama. I'm not saying you shouldn't hire Urban Meyer, but boy, I'd be very, very skeptical. I think the third nugget about head coaches is that, the Eric Bieniemy thing is going to be very interesting. There's a lot of people in the NFL watching that. If he doesn't get a head coaching job, I think there's going to be some real dissatisfaction on the part of the black coaches in the NFL, because they view him as a guy that, Doug Peterson came off the Kansas City staff of Andy Reid and got a job in Philadelphia. Matt Nagy came off the Kansas City staff of Andy Reid doing the same thing, and he got a job in Chicago. And yet, Eric Bieniemy can't get a job when Patrick Mahomes is telling everybody in the league, listen, believe me, take my word for it, this guy's unbelievable. So those are kind of the three things I'm thinking of right now.
Well, it's going to happen at some point, but the ball games are going to be here before you know it. We look forward to it. 3 tomorrow, 3 Sunday. Enjoy those, Peter, and we'll break it all down and get back at it next Friday. Thank you for this.
Thanks, guys.
There's Peter King, our NFL insider from NBC. Yep, there are a lot of good every year it's like, this is a spot you really want to coach. And it's like, really? That team has not won in a million years, but all of a sudden it's going to change.
I've told Jamie,
the Jets.
Yeah. Jamie's had the same thing. We both had buddies that are, look, they'd call me up and say, what do you think about this position? What do you think? I'm just like, you know what? That team's so bad right now. You're going to go there, and you're going to hang your coat on that team, and you're just going to be labeled a loser. And that'll be the end of it. Some guys, it's not like Gerard. Not everyone's Gerard Gallant, where it's like, okay, you're still a good coach. You got Canada and Florida, come out to Vegas. Sometimes you get that hung around you, and it's like, that's it. You're a losing coach. You can't win, and that's the only chance you get. It's a tough thing. It's a tough thing to break into, man.
Well, if you're an up-and-coming coach, you have to choose the right situation. I read the article the other day. I think it was Simmons and Sheldon Keefe. And, Sheldon said, like, there were times where he was sitting – at the Rico Center going, I don't know if I'll ever coach the Leafs. I mean, Babcock seemed like he was going to be here forever. You know what I mean?
It's just crazy, man.
You have to be. And I'm sure there were other scenarios where Sheldon could have been like, you know what, I'll take that job in Colorado when Patrick Waugh, left the team, a week before the season started? Jared Bednar got the job, and Jared's a very good coach.
I'm sure
they've interviewed other people at that time. Point being is, like, you have to choose the right situation that works for you sometimes as well, because you're right. Like, you get labeled a loser. You jump on a sinking ship, and it takes 2 or 3 years to turn it around, and you're not the guy who turns it around.
You're a loser.
But that's where I was going to ask. Like, Adam Gase, you guys think he'd Never gets another
No
job?
Way. Like, Hayes, I love the Jets. The Jets, who were they interviewing the other day? The guy that was with the Bengals for a long time.
Marvin Lewis.
Marvin Lewis. It's like, I like the name Marvin Lewis. He seems like that prototypical football guy. He was there a long time. Yeah, and they made the playoffs a bunch of times under Marvin. But at the end of the day, did he really do anything where you're like, we got to have this guy? I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe he could be a good guy to go into the Jets, but to me, it's either got to be a superstar coach, and I don't know how the hell you do that. It's like you're going to pull somebody out of retirement like Bill Cowher, or it's either got to be that or some next up-and-comer.
Well, that's why Urban Meyer gets brought up so much. Because
I know,
Urban
but
Meyer,
Peter King just said it. This guy retired twice because of stress. He couldn't handle whatever, yeah. And all of a sudden you want to bring him down?
And he's a college guy. He's a college
yes.
guy.
Well,
but he can check off a couple of different boxes. The fact is, like, a superstar Hall of Famer isn't going to Jacksonville. Like, he's not. So that's why it's not a surprise that Urban Meyer, not only is his name attached to it, but the price tag is attached to it. He knows right. they're desperate. He knows they need to turn the corner. He knows Trevor Lawrence is watching, saying, guys, what are you going to do here? And Urban's like, I'll come out of retirement. I'll come up to the NFL, but $12 million a year. You
right.
know, where he'd
Do you think
he
Trevor Lawrence
that.
Has enough power? Trevor Lawrence has enough power to already call the organization and say,
"No,
where are we going with the coach?"
No, I don't think no. so. I mean, listen, in the meetings, you have to bring it up, and he's of course got enough power to be like, "Can you break down your plan?" You know, for sure. But I don't think he can say, "Hey, listen, before you draft me, and I'm technically an employee, here's what I want to see happen."
You're
that
right,
would
but...
be pretty shocking, I think.
Dude, it wouldn't shock me if he's allowed to at least sniff.
But why would you want, if you're Urban Meyer, I mean, maybe just for the challenge, but these college coaches don't get paid, you know, $80. Like, they make
a fortune.
He probably made $8 million a year
yep.
coaching college.
That's right.
All day long.
He was making
all
a fortune.
Long.
A fortune.
And access to, you know, the school's private jet or all of these perks that you wouldn't even
yep.
know that are written into the contract. Like, that's, like, these college coaches, like, they earn their money. Don't get me wrong. They recruit and they work hard, but it's a fantastic job if you can be.
Oh, if you're
the
in
top
there and you've
there.
Got a big program and just top end 5-star players just naturally come
rolling
to you.
Rolling through, yeah.
You're made in the shade. Look at Nick Saban. Obviously, look at Urban Meyer. They're great, great coaches. Like, there's a reason it works. There's a reason every player wants to be there. It's because they know what they're getting. But those are state run. Universities like Ohio State right. is a state-run university. I'm pretty sure Urban Meyer was the highest-paid state employee by like a significant margin, like $3 or $4 million more than the next person who was probably a coach of the basketball team or something like that.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. I can't, like, we'll have to find out. But how much would Urban Meyer make per season?
Oh, he would have been
college.
Making
like
six and a half, I think. Anyway,
more.
He might have been
like,
making.
I'm thinking more.
Grappler, find
I'm
it
thinking
out.
More.
Yeah, yeah, it's a well. Listen, 6.5 is a fortune. I mean, like,
yeah, right.
Babcock signed the biggest deal in NHL history, and it was 6 a year. So Urban Meyer's making 6.5 in the quote unquote minors. That's a massive amount of cake. But yeah, we'll find out. We'll get to it. Ray's going to join us in about 20 minutes. Jack Armstrong still to come on the Raptors game tonight in Sacramento. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Ray's coming up in about 15 minutes. Cannot confirm or deny what we'll get to around 5:30. Tough news in the world of baseball. Tommy Lasorda passing away today at the age of 93. And 93 is such a great life, such a great run. He was such a legend, like a character, man. We just don't see yeah. those type of characters in baseball or in sports anymore.
Yeah.
Getting in fights awesome. With mascots. And it was awesome. Such
I know.
A cool dude. Such a great, like, synonymous with the Dodgers. He was awesome.
I yeah. always have this memory, and it's kind of an awful one, but of him, like, avoiding a third baseball, and he just goes, like, just ass over tea kettle. He falls backwards.
Yeah,
but he was a Los Angeles legend, man. You talk about a guy that was highfalutin in L.A., man. He was
Yeah,
that guy ran that town. But
Tommy
that's a
came
name.
Into your cafe, you were feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a name, though. Like, you know, he was a name not just synonymous with baseball. Like, he was a star.
Yep.
Like a star outside of baseball. Household name.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I know what you're talking about. I think that might have been at the All-Star game. Oh. where he was
trying to get out. Just said it buzzes the tower and he goes backwards.
But he got up and was laughing and joking around.
Video.
He awesome. Like the Philly fanatic. He got into a fight with the Philly fanatic. I think he got into a fight with Yuppie once in Montreal. Those old school managers that would snap on umps and just go on tirades for like 5 minutes. In the tightest uniform.
And their barrel hanging out.
Boiler out, throwing their hat around. Like, just awesome. I miss those guys. I miss that type of interaction, with umpires.
Who would be, in today's world, maybe the new school character?
I don't think there is one like that.
Tortorella a little bit?
Yeah. Yes, he is a character for sure.
It's
but I consider him old school. Like I don't think he's
he would be old school.
new school whatsoever. But he definitely is Tortorella for sure.
Maybe in hockey, John Cooper. Like he's a funny guy.
Yeah,
not
maybe
funny,
a little bit.
Not shy.
But it's just not like the old school out, tight belt on, yelling at the umps.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, baseball's different because they're on the field.
They'll never be that guy anymore.
It doesn't happen anymore. Hour two up next. Ray Ferraro will join us. Our TSN hockey analyst, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.